The following is for information purposes only and should not be considered investment advice. All opinions and views expressed by the contributors to this podcast are in a personal capacity only. They do not represent the views of Progressive Equity Research or any other organization mentioned in this podcast.
Money never sleeps, pal.
So, it is Thursday, the 25th of April. Evening, Jeremy.
Hi, Gareth. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. It's good to have you back. And you'll be pleased to hear that I think we're going to have to start this week's discussion with three versions of Jeremy told us so. Because if I remember rightly, you've been telling us for some time that there could be what you described as the equity market dispersal, where some very highly valued US stocks could start to lose their shine, and that would make significant pools of capital available elsewhere. And I think we've started to see some of that this week, but I'm sure you'll tell us a bit more of the detail. You'd also been saying for a while that, in your view, the UK political risk was a lot lower than many other places, especially given the number of elections that are going on this year, and that lower political risk could offer safe haven or a good place for global investors to put capital. This week, we've seen quite a bit going on in other countries. And I noticed in particular, the left-wing Spanish Prime Minister is currently stepping back from his role, or thinking about stepping back from his role, because his wife is coming under attack or allegations of corruption from the right wing. So that political risk or that political divergence and extreme behaviour on both ends of the spectrum is showing through. And I think there are other examples of that. But again, happy to hear what you think about the UK political landscape, which seems, as you suggested, to be really quite benign compared to that. And then the third, Jeremy told us so, is that ESG seems to be coming under yet more pressure. It's certainly back in the spotlight in terms of it might be holding back our companies or our corporate behaviour.
Yes.
So interested to hear what you're thinking in terms of this week's macro news and that some of the corporate activity in light of those three things. But yeah, three ways in which you've been telling us for a while things could happen and certainly seems to be coming through this week.
So this is the week where the Mag 7 have reported. I mean, even itself, that's pretty interesting because everyone was expecting Tesla to crash and burn. I mean, the shares had been down 40% year to date, and they produced figures that were below what I think were regarded as expectations, and the share price rallied. But I think that was largely on the idea that they would deliver the low-cost version of Tesla sooner rather than later. But Nvidia sold off last week. And in the last 24 hours, Meta has fallen 20% on the back of its results. So there is definitely signs of fracturing from the Magnificent Seven. So I think it is on that front premature to say, I told you so, but I have been telling you so, that we might actually be seeing the start of the great equity market dispersal and the unwinding of this extended period of market concentration. And of course, that has positive implications for the smaller markets and the smaller capitalization stocks. And the UK sitting at something like 4% of global equity market index valuation fits in that category. So as we speak, we've just heard the US GDP numbers, which where the rate of growth of US GDP is halved quarter on quarter to 1.6% from last time's 3.4%, accompanied by inflation data showing that it is stickier in the US than it is in Europe, including the UK. So the PCE core inflation data is actually showing an increase quarter on quarter at the moment. And the US equity indices are down 2% today. The FTSE 100, last time I looked, was at a new all-time high and up. One of the reasons it was up today was because we've had another example of how our equity market is undervalued or coveted indeed by strategic investors in the shape of an approach proposed offer for Anglo American by Aussie miner BHP, which I think has all kinds of implications. First of which I've already made is that our market is continuingly seen as cheap relative to other international markets. In a similar vein, we chatted with Scott last week about the rush for real assets and what's going on in these commodity markets. This is a battle for strategic metals and how you acquire them cost effectively. I also think has interesting implications for that thing that they used to call ESG. everywhere you look at the moment, there seems to be a backpedaling on what we used to regard as ESG and what I would say is a sort of movement of the new realism. Mm-hmm. I think the hidden agenda in the Anglo-American thing is their exposure to coal, and what you do with the coal assets of these mining companies is particularly toxic. They all want the cash flow and the earnings, you know, but
they don't seem to be owning them.
Yeah, they are literally a hot potato. But I think if you put this proposed deal next to what we've been talking about with Shell and BP, well, if Shell wants to be valued more like Exxon, it has to start behaving more like Exxon. It has to be allowed to behave like Exxon, which in the current environment, I would say they don't feel they've got that leeway in the UK.
Yeah. The UK listing is constraining them from that sort of activity or from getting on and doing that. Yeah.
Okay. And I don't think it's a coincidence, as I said before, that within hours of Shell saying what they said, BP let it be known that there had been an approach for BP earlier in the year. So these are critical times for governments who everywhere seem to be backpedaling from previous commitments. This week, I noticed that the SNP have backpedaled on their commitment to reduce fossil fuels. And there are political implications for that. They seem to be losing the support of their coalition partners, the Green Party, over this. But these things are unraveling. We've had the Vauxhall owner in the UK saying they're going to walk from the UK unless they're allowed to continue to make petrol-driven cars. Mm-hmm. In terms of defence spending, we've had the US passing the bill to supply Ukraine with a further $60-odd billion of funding, and the UK following suit saying we're going to increase our defence budget by $75 billion over the coming years. I mean, these numbers are just huge. And in the same breath, Sunak was saying it's in the national interest to buy and fund defence companies, i.e. it's acceptable.
Yeah.
It's a very small step to say it's acceptable to buy shares in BAE or Airbus, to say that it's okay to buy shares in Shell and BP based on the national interest of energy security. So one wonders where this particular pendulum is going to stop, but it's definitely playing into the hands of the UK, where we have quite a lot of exposure to oil and gas in the FTSE 100 and mining assets as well.
Yeah, they've always been international assets, I think, haven't they? A lot of the FTSE 100 has been quite international in its reach. And I suppose in many ways that's been a positive. But now it does make those assets attractive to international buyers, especially if the UK market is holding them back or ESG focus or political pressure is stopping them behaving in the way which is going to maximise value. Somebody else will do it.
There's been a lot of headlines this week about the FTSE 100 back to all-time highs. And I think that looks like an allocation to the UK. And I think it's for many different reasons. And I think we've covered some already. But the other one is the point you sort of opened up with is the perceived political risk of the UK. Mm. I think if you rise above the partisan positioning ahead of what is going to be a general election pretty soon, the perspective of a global investor, whether you have Jeremy Hunt or Rachel Reeves, you can tell
the
difference.
Might not matter. Yeah.
Might not matter. Yeah, exactly. You know, the headline saying that they intend to be more pro-business than Blair, I think is exactly the sort of thing that international investors want to hear. And if you are thinking about allocating capital, I think the UK is fine. And it looks like it's got momentum from a political perspective, because we're not as bad as everybody else. I think it's got momentum from an economic perspective, because we're sort of in line with the G7 economies behind the US. And from a financial perspective, from a market perspective, we're cheap. Mm. And there are some catalysts. Everyone's saying, what is the catalyst? Well, a new realism around ESG is a catalyst.
Yes. Or the political risk in other countries manifesting itself could also be a catalyst. So, yeah.
And the big one, obviously, I mean, if you do have a dispersal of capital coming out of the mega tech in the US or just the bigger stocks in Europe, if there is this fragmentation, then that would be very good news. But we haven't seen that yet.
No, but just a reweighting of some of these big global portfolios could make a massive difference. And it hasn't really kicked in yet.
But the price actions of the smaller capitalized stocks would suggest that some of this capital is starting to trickle down into the mid and small cap stocks.
Okay, great. So I think that's a good point at which to look at some of those UK mid cap stocks or the what's gone on in UK sort of corporate landscape this week. Clearly, we've had the Anglo BHP, the approach and the conversation around that as the headline grabber. But there's also been quite a bit of other activity. There's the building product supplier Tyman has had an agreed offer. We've had the Hypnosis deal from, I think, last week. There's been rumors of a potential offer from Blackstone. And kind of in the opposite direction, we've had JD Sports looking to buy NASDAQ-listed business for over $1 billion.
It is quite amazing, actually, JD Sports, which has been listed all the way from small cap to FTSE 100, can make a $1 billion acquisition of a NASDAQ-listed company and funding it all internally.
Not needing to raise money, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true, but a brave deal and certainly you know, going against the tide. And Filtronic, I know you're quite into the space market and the Elon Musk acolytes. They've done a deal with Filtronic and made quite a difference to Filtronic share price.
It is quite remarkable that they've managed to pull this off. You know, a very well-regarded UK-listed small-cap stock that used to be quite a bit bigger, but has got great heritage in the communications technology that it is agreed to supply to SpaceX subsidiary Starlink, which includes SpaceX looking like it's going to end up owning at least 10% of Filtronic's equity. It's going to grab a lot of headlines and make people focus on what the implications are here for SpaceX to really gear up its plans to launch all these constellation of low Earth orbit satellites. And, you know, when it successfully launches the big Starship rocket in due course, it's potentially disruptive for a lot of different industries. So, yeah, well done, Filtronic.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of UK stocks talking about space now in ways they haven't in the past. And a couple of our clients, CML Microsystems, they're talking about space as a big opportunity for some of their chips. And smaller business Tern, one of their investees, Wild Networks, has been in the space market for some time. And they've seen really quite good success in recent years.
I think the best performing investment trust in the UK year to date is Seraphim Space, or certainly one of them, which I think is understandable when you see deals like this.
So other couple of companies reporting had some progressive client news. We had Sanderson Design Group, Gear for Music and Watkin Jones all coming out with results or trading statements in line or slightly better than expectations, generally performing pretty well despite the tough backdrop. In each case, those shares edged higher or performed pretty well. And I think maybe this time last year, that wouldn't have been good enough. But nowadays, it is good enough and the shares have been doing well. So it's good to see decent results from those three and well received by the market. So it's quite positive, quite encouraging that that's the way markets are taking things at the moment. So there's clearly a lot of risk or concern priced in. And if companies can perform at least in line with expectations, that's good enough or even better.
Yeah, the market definitely has a better feel to it. Yeah, a few months ago, it was far less forgiving.
Yes.
And a lot of companies that were just producing okay results or okay updates in challenging environments would not get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Investors are very much accustomed to seeing the challenging conditions in lots of different subsectors and niche industries. And so companies that perform in line with expectations are being rewarded as I think they should be. So yeah, it's good to see that coming through. And what about next week? What have we got coming up more broadly on the horizon?
Next week's news includes China PMI data on Tuesday. The expectations are for continued modest pickup in activity in the manufacturing sector in China. Probably more important than that, in most European countries and in the European area, we've got GDP data and inflation data. As far as the Eurozone, we're expecting modest growth year on year in GDP. So mind your eye for a negative German GDP print, perhaps. But I think the EU generally, I think they're probably around zero. And for inflation to be unchanged on an annualized basis month on month at around 2.4%. So probably more headlines around sticky inflation.
Okay.
And otherwise, we've got a Fed rate decision on Wednesday, which everyone thinks is going to be unchanged, but a lot of attention going to be focused on the press conference afterwards. And then it's also jobs data next week. We get the JOLTS job openings data on Wednesday. And then on Friday, we get the non-farm payrolls, where, as always, we have expectations that this month is going to be slower. And every month, I think, for the last year or so, they've not just got that a bit wrong. The expectations have been very wrong. One day they will be right, but let's see whether it's next week.
With GDP growth halving quarter on quarter in the States.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Maybe this is it.
Yeah.
If only life was so simple.
Yeah. Right. Good. Well, we'll wait and see. So lots to look forward to next week. Thank you very much, as always, Jeremy. Great to get your input. And we'll catch up this time next week.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Brought to you by Progressive Equity.
This is your wake-up call, pal.
go to work.